Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
This is WTIC's Law Talk, a project of the Hartford County Bar Association. If you have a legal question, call now, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC. And now, it's time for Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Welcome to Law Talk. Delighted to have you with us. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. My privilege these afternoons to host these get-togethers and to field your questions, your legal comments, your legal issues. If we can give you some legal advice that'll help guide you through that thicket of laws and rules and regulations, we're delighted to do it. The way we do that is by taking your phone calls at 860-522-WTIC. That is 860-522-9842. We're here until 1 o'clock, and then it's news, weather, and pet talk. So if you're thinking about giving us a call, looking for a little bit of insight, got a legal issue that you want to be heard on, better to call a little bit earlier in the hour than later. Last week, we had a whole slew of calls towards the end of the show, and I don't think we were able to give them quite the attention they deserved. So if you're giving it a call, thinking about it, give us a call. I'd be delighted to hear from you. In the meantime, let me tell you what we've got lined up for today. As is often the case, we've got some carefully curated cases handed down by Connecticut judges. This week, they're all in the state court, not in the federal court, as we sometimes do also. And they're all selected to point out a couple of issues that we think you will find at the bare minimum interesting, hopefully entertaining, but certainly something that may come up and it may be an issue that you or somebody that you know is going to encounter. So without further ado, let me tell you about today's runoff. First of all, an issue that spans the gap between personal injury law and housing law. What does that mean? Here's what it means. If Vinny owns an apartment complex and he rents an apartment to a tenant, and that tenant's visitor is injured on a defective stairwell, can Vinny be protected by a lease which puts the maintenance burden on the tenant? We'll look into that, and the case takes a direction that you might not expect and for reasons that you might not have been aware of. There's something in there for landlords, there's something in there for tenants, and for visitors who may be injured on someone's property. We're going to follow that up with an area in housing law that is very poorly understood. It's called wrongful entry and detention. And this was a case that was tried on parts of five separate court days. We'll tell you what happened at the end. And the question that we will have when we get to that point is, was it worth it? So then we're going to get to a couple of other cases, too. Brian is injured when the wall that he was standing on while he was doing yard work crumbles under his weight. Is the city of Waterbury responsible? We'll tell you what the judge said and why. And this is something that you may not have understood because it involves the statute for injuries on highways and bridges. Guess what? There's a lot more to it than just highways and bridges. Finally, we're going to take a trip to the beach in Fairfield, Connecticut. We've got neighbors fighting over access to the beach. And so we'll explore a question of what's an easement. And by the way, what exactly is a beach for these purposes? it may be different than you and I think. I know I certainly had a different insight after looking at this decision. So that's what we're going to be doing. And in between that, we welcome your phone calls at 860-522-WTIC. That's 860-522-9842. And we're giving some serious thought to playing You Be the Judge. And so our guest judge, Kevin, our producer, may end up being asked to weigh in on a couple of these and tell all of us what he thinks should happen. And then we'll see if the real judge agreed with Judge Kevin. So that's the rundown. And let me start off with this first case, which is the one that Vinny rents the apartment to a tenant. Okay. This is a case from Bridgeport. And what happened here is that the tenant had a visitor who came, and on the way in or the way out of the unit, it's not clear which, they had to use an interior stairway. And the visitor fell and sustained significant injuries. And so the visitor sues Vinny, who is the owner of the complex. Well, Vinny raises several special defenses. And the first one he says is that I got a written lease with the tenant, and the tenant lease surrenders all control and responsibility over the premises for as long as the lease lasts to the tenant. So as a starting point, I'm protected. It's the tenant's fault. Okay, so they're arguing this, and the judge brings up a question, and they have to go and brief this and then argue it later. And the question the judge brings up, is it reasonable to expect a residential tenant to become aware of structural deficiencies and fix them as a matter of public policy or practicality? Okay, interesting way for the judge to look at. They did additional supplemental briefs. They argued it further. And Vinny's lawyers come up with an argument from a 1969 Supreme Court case here in Connecticut. It says that the common law, as a general rule, landlords under no implied obligation or liability to the tenant for personal injuries because of a defective condition of the premises or the lack of repair or defects, unless the landlord has made some kind of warranty or it's in the lease concerning the premises. So the landlord's lawyers say, hey, that disposes of the issue. This injured visitor has got no claim against me. Well, the court basically says this is a very fact-specific inquiry, and we have to look at the intention of the lease in the light of all the significant facts which bear on the issue. And I see we're going to have to break in just a minute. So when we come back, we'll find out what the judge did with this. On the one hand, the landlord says, I'm exonerated. That lease that was signed by the tenant assumes the entire obligation for maintenance and repair. And the judge is saying, well, as a matter of public policy, is that what we want to do? So we're going to take a look at not only what the judge said, but what the reasoning was that led to that decision. And we're going to do all of that after this break. In the meantime, looking for you to call so we can give you a hand. The number is 860-522-WTIC. That's 860-522-9842. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. If we're going to do You Be the Judge, we've got the Honorable Kevin Corza, judge for the day, standing by, and we'll see what he thinks. We'll be back with more of Law Talk right after this.
And now, back to Law Talk on WTIC, News Talk 1080.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back, everybody. The late, great Jerry Lee Lewis. Thank you for that, Kevin. Appreciate it. You're listening to Law Talk. It's WTIC News Talk 1080. It's WTIC.com on the internet. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. We're here until 1 o'clock. One of the goals of the program is to field your calls and dispense legal information, legal advice. And so if you've got a question, you've got a legal comment, delighted to hear from you at 860-522-WTIC. That's 860-522-9842. Okay, before the break, we were visiting a recent decision that involves whether or not a landlord is responsible when the tenant's visitor falls on a stairwell that was allegedly defective. And in this particular case, the landlord says, nothing doing. The lease that the tenant signed with me puts all the burden on the tenant for the repairs and the maintenance. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the end of the issue. Okay, so we're going to basically do a judge for a day question on this here, and maybe it's a judge for the hour, actually. We're going to ask the Honorable Kevin Corza, who, when he's not filling in as judge, is my engineer and producer here, to take up the role here. So, judge, everybody stand. The judge is entering the courtroom. Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for having me on.
So, Judge, here is the issue for you. Vinny's lease says the tenant has assumed all responsibility for maintenance, repairs, etc. The tenant's own visitor falls on a stairway that she alleges is defective, but she's suing me. And the landlord relies upon some case law from 1969 that seems to say that he's not responsible unless he retains the responsibility in some kind of a guarantee or a document. So the first question is, should the landlord be responsible for the injuries to the tenant's guest, or do the terms of this lease control and Vinny, the landlord, gets off the hook? What sayest thou, Judge?
So I would vote in favor of the landlord.
Okay. And is that because of the fact that the lease says I'm not responsible?
Yes.
Okay. So we know what Judge Kevin says. Let's see what the real judge says and why, okay? Real judge says, landlord, you're still on the hook. So at this point, Kevin, you're down one. We'll give you another shot later.
Oh, boy.
But let's go into the reasoning, because that's what makes it different, okay? First of all, the judge says, yeah, I looked at that case from 1969 that you relied upon. What you didn't rely upon is the very next paragraph, which says that this is a question of retention of responsibility in light of all the circumstances. And further, that same case says that I can find that the landlord retained control of the stairway if there is evidence that he was granted general access to the apartment for the purpose of inspection and repair. So the real judge says, let's look at the lease. Guess what? Paragraph 9, you will allow us, meaning the landlord, to enter the house, to inspect it, to make needed or agreed repairs, alterations, or improvements, supply service, show it to possible or actual buyers, mortgagees, tenants, workmen, and so on. Okay? Which, by the way, is extremely standard common language. So the court then goes on to say, so you've retained the right retain the control, at least to that extent. And then here's the killer. Said the case you recited was good law in 1969. Well, in 1976, the state legislature passed the landlord-tenant statutes, and there it's completely different. They supersede that previous law and basically says that the landlord is still responsible. So that's the reasoning, and here are the takeaways for landlords, for tenants, and for any visitors who get injured. First of all, the landlord isn't off the hook because of some language in a lease which says you are going to exonerate me and you're going to assume all of the responsibility for these repairs. If you retain the right to enter it for various purposes like that, that's evidence of retention. And retention is the key to responsibility here. The second thing is the landlord-tenant statute imposes a burden on the landlord that goes beyond what the law said in 1969. So the takeaway, landlord, if you put the language in the lease, that may feel good. Tenant may sign it. But if there's an injury like this, you're not off the hook. Tenants, if you're uncomfortable signing that language, understandably so. You should take some comfort in the fact that the court is unlikely to enforce it. And if you happen to be a visitor to the premises and you are injured, especially on something like a common interior stairway, as was the case here, then the result is different. You still have the claim against the landlord. So that is our first case for today. That is our takeaway. Judge Kevin, now that you've heard the reasoning of the real judge, what do you think? Are you reconsidering your ruling?
You know, listening to what the real judge said, I probably wouldn't be a good real life judge because I don't think I would be. I do agree with the real life's judge's verdict. It makes sense now after you think about it, but it's the whole contract signing thing is so tricky. You have to be very, very careful with like what you sign and everything, and they just try to get out of everything.
And that is a tremendous additional takeaway for our audience. So we thank you for that, Kevin, because if it's a lease, if it's a contract, please read it. Read it carefully. If there are parts of it that you don't understand, ask for an explanation. I realize that a lot of tenants have a lease shoved under their nose and saying, here's the lease for the premises, sign it. Well, if you have to sign it, make sure you understand it. That's key here. So we've used this and we've basically used it as an intersection of personal injury law and housing law, and we hope that you find that helpful. The next case coming up, which is a little bit different, is sort of a hybrid. And there's a law called wrongful entry and detainer. So we've only got a couple of minutes before we have to break. So let me see if I can tell you the facts, okay? This is a foreclosure of a mortgage. And the person who's being foreclosed on is named Nancy. So there's a foreclosure by sale. And it looks like the foreclosing bank was the successful bidder. And per the normal practice, the court has to approve the sale. And it does. And it has to approve the deed by which the bank acquires the title. And it does. Well, Nancy takes an appeal, and that appeal is pending. In the meantime, the bank says, well, we're now the owners of this property. We're not in the business of owning property, so we want to sell this property. And what we're going to do is get it ready for sale. So they hire a bunch of different outside vendors. They hire one to go and check on the status of the property, and they hire another one to get it ready for sale. They hire another one that's a real estate agent to list it for sale. So they have all of these different personnel in place. And the first thing that happens is that the people checking on the status look through a window and they say, you know, it may still be occupied, but the refrigerator is missing. There's no stove. And it doesn't look like somebody could actually live there. So they're told to go in there, inspect further, and to change the locks. And that's exactly what they do. Well, they carry on a little bit further, and in getting ready for the place to be sold, they hire another firm, and they come in, and it turns out that this fellow's mother runs a thrift shop in Eastern Connecticut. So he says, hey, Mom, come on over and see if there's anything there that you'd like that you might be able to sell. And she comes in, and while she's looking through the things, the woman, Nancy, shows up to pick up the mail and see what's going on. Nancy doesn't really say much about what's going on because she figures that maybe she lost the right to all of this. Well, that's before she got lawyered up. Now, that music is telling me that we're breaking very shortly for news and weather, so we're going to come back with this story afterwards because it takes a funny turn, and you'll find out exactly what happens to Nancy's lawsuit and why and what we can all take away from that. So that's what we'll be doing, and in addition, we're delighted to hear from you if you've got a question that we can help you with. You're listening to Law Talk on WTIC, News Talk 1080. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. And with me is Judge for the Hour, Kevin Corza, filling in. We'll get back to you right after all of this.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
And now, back to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Okay, Bobby Fuller Foro welcoming us back to our second half of Law Talk on a sunny Saturday. Oh, it's so good to see that out there. I'm attorney John Matulis. This is WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net. Odyssey Radio, that's what we got here. Before we get back to the case we're discussing, this wrongful entry and detainer case that took some funny twists, it's the time in the show where I mention to you that if you need legal advice or assistance and you don't have an attorney, we recommend that you consider the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service. Underline not-for-profit, because that's the heart of this here. It's done as a public service. The way it works is that I'm going to give you a phone number in just a moment, and you'll call them and you will tell them a couple of answers so they can categorize the nature of your legal issue. You then get referred to an attorney who practices in the appropriate discipline to help you. And the questions are, what do I get and what does it cost? Those are good questions. Let me see if I can give you good answers. What you get is a half-hour consult with that attorney, and that can be in the attorney's office. It can be over the telephone. You can do a Zoom conference, whatever the two of you decide. Now, these are attorneys that have been vetted. First of all, they've demonstrated that they're experienced in the specific discipline for which you're being referred to them. Secondly, they are insured, and that has been demonstrated. And third, they are free of disciplinary entanglements. That is better than you're going to get by picking up somebody off the billboard that you saw out at the corner of your eye on Interstate 91 northbound, or the name of the lawyer that the person seated on the bar stool next to you last Thursday night was raving about. So that's what you get. And at the end of that conference, there's no further obligation whatsoever. There's no hard sell. There's nothing of the nature. If further legal services are requested, you and the attorney are free to discuss that. If the two of you decide to go forward together, that's fine. If you do not, that is fine also. Okay, the big question, the money involved. So what's this going to cost me? Because I know that hourly rates for attorneys, especially experienced ones, are pretty substantial. Good question. There's a one-time-only fee of $35, and that goes to help pay for the cost of running the program. It doesn't even cover the whole thing. It has to pay for rent, for phone service. It has to pay for the staff and the personnel that operate the program, etc. Now, there's a couple of exceptions, and these are exceptions in your favor. If you're calling about your personal injury claim, no $35 fee. You're banged up, we're not going to charge you. You're not calling about that, but you're calling about your workers' compensation claim, ditto. No $35 charge for you either. And there's one more. If you're calling about your Social Security disability claim, no fee for you either. So how do you reach this service? Glad you asked. Here is the phone number. Pencils ready. 860-525-6052. That's 860-525-6052. That is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service at 860-525-6052. If you want to tell them you heard about it on Law Talk, love to have you do that. Okay, that is the story. Let us get back to this wrongful entry and detainer case. In case you just joined us, this is a person named Nancy. She's lost her house in a foreclosure. The bank is now the owner of record of the house, although there's an appeal pending in the appellate court from the foreclosure. The bank is getting it ready to sell because banks are not in the business of owning and managing real property. And so they've had a whole team on this. One of them, a team members, has gone over, checked it out, and determined that there's some signs that it might be occupied, even though there's no refrigerator, there's no stove. Another one has basically gone over, changed the locks. And the third one basically has tried to get it ready for sale. And it turns out his job was to dispose of the contents left behind. And it turns out that his mother happens to have a tag sale shop in Eastern Connecticut. So he said, hey, Mom, come on over. And if there's anything you're interested in, feel free to take it. Well, Nancy, who is the former owner, shows up to pick up the mail and check on the place while they're doing all of this. And she doesn't really say much because she says at the time she thought that the foreclosure wiped out her chance to do anything. Then she gets lawyered up, okay? Oh, there's also a company of real estate agents, and they're putting a sign for sale out there. So it's pretty clear which way this thing is going. Well, there's a law called wrongful entry and detainer. And Nancy finds an attorney who pursues this. They sue everybody on the horizon. They sue the foreclosing bank. They sue the servicing agent. They sue the real estate agent. They sue the get ready for sale people. They're all defendants. So this case was on an order to show cause, and it was tried at various portions of the day over five separate days. That took months and months. And it was done in the housing court, which is appropriate. And that's what happens with lengthy matters in the housing court. You get to try them in bits and pieces because there's no big uninterrupted block of time available for anybody. So here's basically what the judge says, okay? And the important focus here is whether or not Nancy still had possession of the premises. Remember, there was no stove. There was no refrigerator. The report is that clothes were strewn about and everything else. Well, there was still electricity, and there were still some books on the shelves and so on. So the judge says, well, we understand you're claiming it was not habitable with no stove and no refrigerator. Guess what? The test isn't whether it's habitable or whether it's occupied. It's whether she's in possession of the premises. And under all of the circumstances here, Nancy is still in possession of the premises, despite the fact that there was evidence that was unchallenged. There were overgrown shrubs outside, no food in the home, no refrigerator, no stove. As mentioned, the electricity was still on. Oh, there was a half tank of oil in the house, although this was all done during the summer. Photos that were introduced into evidence revealed there was toilet paper in all of the bathrooms, books on the shelves throughout the home, furniture in the home, no linens on the beds, clothing and other items strewn about. So what the judge says is, I find that she was in possession of the premises, although she might not have been occupying it. Major difference. Big surprise for the bank. And for any of you who may be buying a piece of foreclosed property, that's residential property from a bank that's acquired it via foreclosure, watch out for this, because if they haven't proceeded with what's called an ejectment of the previous occupants, they may still have the right to possess, not to occupy, but to possess the premises. And then that means if you go in there and change the locks, as was done here, it's a wrongful entry and detainer. Well, is there a money aspect to this? You bet there is. Nancy submits an affidavit, and with it is a list of what she says is all of the personal property that was in the house when she left. And she puts a price tag of $24,475 on all of those items that are no longer there. So what does the judge say about this? Glad you asked. Okay. First of all, the judge points out in a rather catty fashion that Nancy listed many items of the affidavit were, quote, priceless, close quote. And then the judge says this. She says, Nancy knew the property was in foreclosure and had months to remove items of value. And then she had sufficient time and opportunity to retrieve some of her so-called priceless items at the time. There was testimony from the bank's crew that a majority of the furniture was covered in mouse feces, and that was corroborated. There was a mouse infestation. And then the lady with the tag sale store, she testified that many of the items were unfit for sale, and the judge found her testimony credible. So the court says, well, all right, you know, they took your stuff, but the burden is on you to establish what it's worth. You haven't given us any credible gauge for that. We're going to award you nominal damages. What were nominal damages in this place? I'll tell you exactly what it says here. Quote, therefore, the court awards $1 in damages for the items lost and taken. And that's the end of the decision. So as we introduced this one previously, the question was it worth it? Okay. This trial went on over five separate court days. There are numerous defendants. There are one, two, three, four, five, six lawsuits, six law firms involved defending all of these lawsuits. And the end result is, yeah, there was a wrongful entry and a detainer, and her damages are $1. Why do we mention this? First of all, you need to know about the wrongful entry and detainer law, but it's not a bonanza, and it's not going to turn into a windfall for somebody, especially when the circumstances were such as they were in this case. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back to you with more of Law Talk. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. It's WTIC News Talk 1080. It's WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net. All of it brought to you by Odyssey.
And now, back to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck.
Okay, welcome back to Law Talk. I guess that's a little bit of Johnny Cash. Thank you for that, Kevin. A little bit of change of pace for us. We're heading right up until 1 o'clock, and then it's news weather, followed by Pet Talk. And that's all part of your help block on Saturdays right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. This part of it is the tail end of Law Talk, where we discuss matters of legal interest. We decipher some of the legal gobbledygook, and we try to do it in a way that you can take away something that is interesting and hopefully may be helpful to you. Next one we're going to talk about is a case from the Waterbury Superior Court, and this is interesting facts, and it involves something called the Highway and Bridges Statute, okay? Brian is standing on a stone wall, and he's doing some yard work, and then he alleges that the stone wall underneath him starts to crumble. His complaint says that it suddenly and without warning cracked and crumbled beneath him, and I guess he fell as a result, and it caused him injury. So he files a complaint against the city of Waterbury under the defective highway statute. So there's a whole slew of questions that come up right there. What does a wall have to do with a highway? And was this a defective highway? It wasn't even a highway. It was a wall. So let's discuss that. First of all, the defective highway statute applies to a whole bunch of things besides just a highway. It very clearly applies to municipal sidewalks, and this is a little bit beyond that, so we'll get back to that in a minute. But to recover against a city or a municipality, city, town, borough, whatever you want to call it here in Connecticut, there's a bunch of things that have to be proven. And I'll start off with the first thing you have to do. You have only 90 days in which to give a written notice to the town clerk of the town where this injury occurred, and it has to explain when it happened, where it happened, what the nature of the defect was, and at least something about the nature of the injuries that you suffered, okay? So without that written notice, which is intended to give the town an opportunity to investigate, to defend itself, your case is going to get dismissed. So if you comply with the written notice, then here's what you have to prove at court. You have to prove that the defect existed as claimed. You have to prove that the defendant city or municipality actually knew of the defect, or that in exercising its obligation to supervise the highways in the city, it should have known of it. And then having actual or constructive knowledge, they failed to remedy it, although they had a reasonable time under the circumstances to do so. And then get this one, which is the killer for most of these cases. The defect has to have been the sole proximate cause of your injuries. So you have to prove that you are free from contributory negligence. Now, what kind of claims are these usually? A lot of times it's a defective sidewalk. How do sidewalks get defective? Ever see a large tree growing right next to the sidewalk, or maybe in the green space between the edge of the sidewalk and the curb? Those trees have roots, and the trees that have roots that come to the surface often raise up one of the sidewalk flags. So you've got a tripping hazard, okay? That's one example. And these cases are the bread and butter of personal injury practices. They happen a lot. The law is very clearly developed. So a couple of other examples before we get to what happened to Brian and how he can justify the claim with a wall, okay? Another example is supposing that you're having some construction work done on your property. Say you're having a garage built behind your house, and the concrete truck, which is heavy, 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 backs up over the sidewalk in order to deliver the concrete to the foundation, and in the process, it breaks up the sidewalk, and the city doesn't fix it, and you don't fix it, and eventually it becomes a tripping hazard and somebody trips. So there's a couple of different examples right there, improperly repaired sidewalks, things of that nature. This one here is a wall. So how does Brian say that that's part of the highway or the wall? Okay, well, the first thing is if it's not in the roadway, it has to be a menace to travel over the roadway, which includes the sidewalk, and it has to be something that could be protected against. Remedial measures have to be reasonably applied so that the failure to do so would be regarded as a lack of a reasonable repair. Now, if that language sounds stilted, sorry about that. Basically, it says that it's got to be a menace to traffic going back and forth. The case law says clearly the defect does not have to be on the actual traveled portion of the highway. And the person who's injured has to be on the highway, including the sidewalk, for some legitimate purpose connected with travel thereon. Now, what about the wall here? Well, the judge says that in Brian's complaint, there was no allegation that there was a direct menace to travel. There was no allegation that the defective wall was on or even near the traveled portion of the highway. Instead, Brian's complaint simply says he was standing on a stone wall. It cracked and crumbled beneath him without any mention of where the wall was in relation to the highway or a road or a bridge. So the judge basically said, sorry, Brian, your claim against the city of Waterbury is going to fail. And is Brian done? Well, not really, because this lawsuit mentions that he sued several other defendants. And there's a masonry concrete and asphalt paving company that he sued. They probably had a lot to do with this. So his claim may be alive against other parties. But here's the significance of this. Think back to just a moment ago when we were talking about the requirements, and the toughest one, which I flagged for you, the defect has to have been the sole proximate cause of the injuries and damages. If you're claiming that someone else contributed to it, such as this masonry contractor, well, then the city's not the sole proximate cause. So it sounds like they might have gotten out anyway, even if this was right smack dab in the middle of the sidewalk. So the question that you wonder about here is, why bother to include the city? And you've got a claim against someone else, the existence of which is going to screw up your claim against the city. But this was done. And so what are our takeaways on this one? Well, our takeaways are as follows. Number one, injuries that are covered by this highway defective highway statute are not limited to highways or sidewalks. It includes other things also. But those other things have to be close enough to the roadway so that it's basically going to interfere with the passage of people properly using it. Number two, if you are going to make a claim against a municipality, be real careful about the written notice requirement, which we talked about a little bit earlier, because you've only got 90 days from the day of the injury occurring in which to do it. And then number three, again, part of the sole proximate cause business, if you yourself were negligent in any way, and you can be sure the city's going to claim the case, that negligence kills your case. And so that's the takeaway, and that music in the background is the clue that yet another Law Talk is finishing up. So it's time for me to say thank you all for listening. I appreciate the opportunity to join you on these Saturdays, share some information, and hopefully provide you some information that may entertain you somewhat, but hopefully will help to clear up some of the confusion and cut through the legal gobbledygook. I want to say thanks also to my producer, Kevin Corza. Today he was also the Honorable Kevin Corza, judge for the day, and he helped us to demonstrate some of the points that we talked about. Me, I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association, and as we say in Law Talk, see you next week.
Law Talk is presented as a public service by the Hartford County Bar Association. Its content is intended to be educational and informative, but is not considered to be formal legal opinion. If you want or need a formal legal opinion upon which to rely in decision-making, please consider formally engaging an attorney to review all relevant facts in detail and examine the pertinent law as it applies to those facts. A solid opinion means better decisions. The views expressed during this program are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the Hartford County Bar Association, its officers, or its directors.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Baseball season is heating up. Odyssey has you covered with the most entertaining coverage of your team. Stay locked in and in the know with the local voices you trust as they bring you unfiltered takes, recap games, react to the latest team news, and talk to callers. Listen to your favorite shows for free on the Odyssey app, Odyssey.com, your smart speaker, or in the car with Android Auto or Apple CarPlay.